Budget and Finance meeting to order and ask for the roll call, please. Marcy?
On the roll for the Budget and Finance Committee meeting of April 26, 2017, Director Canepa.
Here.
Director Chavez.
Here.
Director Joya. Director Hudson. Director Miley. Director Mitchoff.
Here.
Director Ross. Committee Vice Chair Rice. Committee Chair Groom.
Present.
We do not have a quorum.
John was going to be here. I saw him yesterday because today's denim day. That's why I'm wearing denim. And he told me he'd be here because we've got a speaking engagement. So I'm surprised he's not here.
So we will take public comment. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address an item that's not on the agenda? Okay. Then we'll go to, we're going to defer the approval of the March 22nd minutes. And we will take.
We could do item six.
Okay, let's do item six, which is the third quarter financial report, fiscal year ending 2017.
Okay, Stephanie Osaz will give us a presentation.
Good morning, Stephanie, and welcome.
Okay. Good morning. Just give me 1 second. Okay. Good morning, Chair Groom and members of the Budget and Finance Committee. So today I'll briefly go over the third quarter financial report for this current fiscal year. There's not a lot of information or changes that need to be addressed at this time. But if there are questions as I go through my presentation, please feel free to stop me. So the overview today, we'll be talking about the third quarter, which started from July of 2016 through March 31st. The overview will cover the revenues, expenditure, investment, the general fund balance and unfunded liabilities, and the purchasing report requirements. So this first presentation or this first slide shows the general fund revenues for the third quarter. It compares it to the budget that was adopted back last year. And as you can see, the total revenues currently we're at 83%. And pretty much we are on target with all of our revenues. There are a couple categories that exceed what was initially adopted. We have the asbestos fees. They're a little bit over than what we initially had projected back in for the 2017 budget, as well as we see that penalties and settlements are a little bit over as well. And again, these are categories that are not easy to predict or to budget for, so we try our best to be as conservative as possible with these. But again, as you can see, correct. Interest revenue is another one that's a little bit difficult to predict. As you know, we invest with the County of San Mateo, and so this also is a category that's allocated across all the various participants in the pool, and it's also based on the average balances for those participants. So again, that's another category that's just a little bit slightly hard to predict as well. Sorry. This next slide shows the revenue comparison, and what we do here is we look at the prior year of 2016 for that same quarter and compare it to the current year. And as you can see, most of these are slight differences, except for when you look at the permit fee receipts. And again, the reason for that being slightly higher is due to the fact that we did have fee increases that went into effect at the beginning of this fiscal year. So that's the reason for that increase. And then the slightly with penalties and settlements, the other category, we did have a large settlement last year. And so as you could see, that's why that's down by about $3 million. Next, we look at the general fund expenditure side of the books, and we compare that again to what was adopted by the board for 2017. And our salaries and benefits are pretty much on target. We are in the third quarter, so we should be around the 70-75% range. And operating services and supplies and capital outlay, These are pretty much on target in terms of where we are. Of course, services are incurred once we pay the invoice or we acquire those services. So again, we're pretty much on target with where we should be. We then look at the prior year, third quarter, and compare it to the current year for the expense. And you can see that salaries are up as well as benefits. And the reason for that increase is due to the, I believe it was the 2.5% COLA that was, I'm sorry, it's 2.2% COLA that was that went into effect on July 1st of this fiscal year. And then we are looking at the benefit side, and we saw premium increases on the benefit side. So that's the reason for those increases. The services and supplies are slightly higher, and capital outlay, that's really the result of the purchase of the parking structure from 2016 that you're seeing that significant reduction there. Next, we look at the cash with the County of San Mateo, and the district represents about 4% of the total county pool as of March. And the pooled earned about 1.1% for that quarter. This next slide shows the fund balance and unfunded liabilities for the district. So as you can see, we have the 2015 audited fund balance, the 2016 audited. And then we have what we are currently projecting for 2017. So as you can see, there is a total fund balance projected for 2017 of $39 million. And we also show the unfunded liabilities based on the 2015 actuarial valuation report, which shows our pension at $59 million unfunded liabilities and OPEB at $32 million for a total of $92 million. Next, we go to the purchasing reporting requirements. And as a part of the quarterly report, we provide a listing of the reoccurring routine payments that we make in order to operate on a day-to-day basis. And these are the expenses that are more than $100,000 that we are reporting here as full disclosure. So the next slide provides the list of the vendor payments that are cumulative payments we've made from July through March. And these are typical, just basically benefits and some of the day-to-day costs, such as fleet services in terms of operating the district's business. This concludes my presentation. So if there's no questions, are there any questions?
What is your pleasure? Do you want to go and do the PARs?
Yes, because...
Okay, good enough. So now we will take item number five.
Yes, Madam Chair and members of the Budget and Finance Committee. Rex Sanders will kick off this presentation, and then we do have folks from PARs who are going to do the bulk of the presentation, and we have plenty of time for questions. This is not an action item today.
Okay.
It's for your information, and we will answer as many questions as we can today. If we need to come back, we'll come back. There's no time constraint in terms of taking action on this item. And I'll hand it over to Rex.
Thank you, Jean. Good morning, Chair Groom, members of the Budget and Finance Committee. As you know, at your last committee meeting, you requested that we bring forth an item at this meeting about investment options available to invest the Air District's OPEB and pension liability investments. And we're bringing this presentation, like Jean mentioned, as informational only. We're very fortunate this morning to have the top folks at PARS and Highmark Capital to provide you more information on their 115 trust. And at this time, I'd like to introduce you to Mr. Mitch Barker, Executive Vice President of the Public Agency Retirement Services, also known as PARS, and Mr. Andrew Brown, Senior Portfolio Manager of Highmark Capital, who will provide today's presentation. So I'll invite them up to the podium.
Thank you and welcome.
Thank you, Mitch.
morning, members of the board. Thank you for this opportunity. As mentioned, I'm Mitch Barker, Executive Vice President with PARS. Our office is located in Orange County by John Wayne Airport, but I have two daughters that live up in the Bay Area, so I spend a lot of time here, including grandkids. Presentation is going to begin on page 3. Quick overview of our 115 trust team. There are three companies that combine their services to provide this program to public agencies. PARS, we're known as trust administrators, so we design these plans, we implement them, and then we administer them for the life of the plan. We're all about public agencies, and we're all about retirement plans. We don't operate in the private sector space at all. What do we really do? We would do record keeping and sub-trust accounting. This is one trust. Multiple agencies have joined this trust, over 250 in fact, and we have to keep everybody separate. So we do what's called the sub-trust accounting. We certainly monitor plan compliance. IRS changes the rules. GASB changes the rules. State government code sometimes. We have to monitor all that and make sure that your plan always stays in compliance. One thing we're proud of is our OPEB experience. We've been doing this for 21 years. Which is kind of interesting. GASB 45 just came out in 2004, right? So how do we get started before that? We had a school district in Southern California, Ontario, Montclair, that quite visionaries, and they said in 1995, we want to set money aside for retiree medical before the word OPEB was even in our lexicon. And we said, why? GASB doesn't require that. And they said, FASB 106. So they were using a private sector accounting regulation to drive them forward. We set up a trust for them. We chose Highmark Capital as our partner, investment partner, and we've been together ever since. Sure enough, 8 years later, 2004, GASB 45 came out, and the OPEB world really got going. U.S. Bank is our trustee. They're the custodian of the assets, so they safeguard this money in a walled-off trust that is not accessible by creditors. Highmark Capital, as mentioned, is our investment management partner. Two key things about Highmark I want to impress upon the board. They have an open architecture platform, which means they can choose from any fund in the universe. There's 14,000 out there, so fortunately they have a research group to help cull that down into a working group of about 100. And using baseball terminology, we have to decide which 20 of the 100 get on the field, knowing that they have a deep bench to go to if a fund is not working properly. And again, we've enjoyed working with Highmark for a long time. Andrew Brown, their senior portfolio manager, who's with me today, will go into more details. All right, our IRS-approved trust. As mentioned, OPEB, we've been there for a long time. Back in 2006, we got an IRS approval for an OPEB-only trust. But pension pre-funding was certainly getting rolling about 3 to 4 years ago. And we said, we got to do something about that. We have to offer something. So in June of 2015, we got IRS approval for a combination trust. That's my simple layman's term. The technical term is a post-employment benefit trust. What are the two post-employment benefits? OPEB and pension. So any agency has the capability to pre-fund either. We want to make it very flexible, very user-friendly. There's no cost to adopt, and we don't charge any fees until assets go in the trust. But as you see, OPEB is on the left. That speaks to GASB 45. GASB 75 is about ready to replace 45, as you may have heard. And then pension is on the right. We call that particular program the Pension Rate Stabilization Program, or PRSP for short. Two ways to use the money on pension. We can reimburse the agency for pension expenses, or we can pay the retirement system directly. We are directed by the district as to which way they want to go. Some key parts, we have to separate the accounting for these two because of the GASB rules. You can pre-fund one now and the other later. Both address unfunded liabilities. You can choose different risk tolerance levels, which has certainly been the MO so far among our clients. Again, you can access funds at any time, but think of them vertically. You can use OPEB for OPEB only, and you can use pension for pension only. That's one of the restrictions of GASB. All right, I wanted to share with you our client list because, let's face it, folks want to know, who else are you working with? That's interesting to me. So we have over 250 clients in this trust, and I wanted to share with you those that are in the Bay Area that you will know. Many of them are part of Bay Area AQMD. So one in particular is Metropolitan Transportation Commission right here in the same building, and we've worked with Brian Mayhew for many, many years. In fact, he is one of five agencies that left our friends in Sacramento, our CalPERS, our competitors, and came to our OPEB program many years ago. And we're very proud of that. And we've kept their business ever since. I also wanted to add one more county, oversight on my part. Sonoma County is also in this 115 trust, and they're obviously a member of your district. So we've got lots of cities, counties, special districts, and school districts. We also have three AQMD districts, Great Basin Unified. What a great story that is out in Inyo County, Mojave Desert, AQMD, and Monterey Bay Unified Air Pollution Control.
Mr. Barker, Contra Costa County, is that just for the OPEB?
Yes, ma'am.
Because it's a 1937 Act county, so I'm assuming 1937 Act counties are not involved in the pension rate stabilization program, or they could
be? They have the option to adopt it. They haven't yet.
Okay.
We have several that are moving down the path of adoption, but so far all agencies that have adopted the pension component have been CalPERS agencies.
And that's fine. I'm just seeing under some the special districts some – I used to sit on CICERA, and so I'm seeing. So I'm assuming, and thank you for that answer, that the OPEB, that it's just OPEB for these agencies. Thank you.
Well, to clarify, a fair number of these on this list have also adopted pension.
Oh, no, yeah. I understand that, but like Central Contra Costa Sanitary.
The 37 Act, yes.
Yeah, and our the mosquito and vector abatement and Moraga Arinda Fire, and that's okay. I just wanted to make sure I clearly understood that. Thank you.
Yeah. Moraga Arinda Fire, in fact, did adopt the pension trust recently. So,
probably a good idea on their part.
Yep. All right. Let's talk about that pension rate stabilization program. So these numbers off the CalPERS website, numbers somewhat reflected in what Stephanie just showed you on the unfunded liability, $59.2 million. Your funded ratio is 78%, which is very good. Your annual contribution, 6.3%. Now here comes the important part. As you know, CalPERS announced in December they're lowering the discount rate from 7.5% to 7%. Think of that as a teeter-totter effect. So when you lower the discount rate, you raise the contribution level, and you also raise the unfunded liability. So the numbers off the CalPERS website using their midpoint adjustments, which we show in the fine print in the footnotes, will go from $6.3 million from this upcoming fiscal year to $13 million. That's your contribution to CalPERS, 106% increase. From a line graph standpoint, we show that on the next page, page 8. You're currently in the blue, and your future contribution amount will go to $13 million as described. The discount rate, they're going to phase in over 3 years. The contribution rate, they're phasing in over 6 years. The whole point is you've got time to plan, and we think adopting our trust and having this pension bucket in which to set money aside for that eventual rate increase makes good sense. You're able to prepare ahead. So here are the 8 reasons why we think this makes sense, adopting pension in a separate trust. Local control of reserve funds. You decide how much you put it in, when you put it in, how much you take out, when you take it out, and also what the risk tolerance level is on your investments. Number 2, diversified investing. You have the potential for greater return than the general fund. Your general fund is governed by a different code section, 53601. We're governed by 53216, just like CalPERS is for both pension and OPEB. And therefore, we're able to diversify the investments. The question is, what risk tolerance level is the district comfortable with? And that's a decision you get to make down the road. Also, these assets in this trust address future pension liabilities. Our auditors are giving us footnote language that you would use on your financial statements to indicate that this money is in a fiduciary fund within an irrevocable trust for the purposes of addressing pension liabilities.
If you want to stop for a second.
I have a quick question for you. I want to walk it back a little. Tell me a little bit about the risk tolerance and how you work with agencies to determine risk tolerance, and how is that sort of put forward?
Since that's an investment question, is it okay for me to punt that one to my friend Andrew, who's got lots of letters behind his name? I've got my layman's version, but he's actually a professional with this, so I'll leave that to him. Thank you. Number four, helps offset pension rate increases. Well, we've had that bullet point in there for 2 years, and sure enough, it came to pass with CalPERS lowering their discount rate and raising their contribution rate. You putting money aside, earning a greater rate of return than your general fund, is going to help you offset those future pension rate increases, and that's the point. Number five, it's a rainy day fund. One board member from another special district that adopted said, Mitch, what you've just described is the ultimate rainy day fund. We have local control over this money. We can use it when we want for pension purposes. We can choose the risk tolerance level for investing, and it offsets pension obligations and liabilities for the future.
So
what's the downside?
So, Mr. Barker, when PERS comes out, CalPERS comes out each year and says you're going to have to contribute X, and that's where I'm a little bit confused. You said you can choose. This fund would then be available to the Air Board to take money out of the trust to pay that annual thing, or does PERS just note that we have a trust and it's worth X and they just carry it on the books?
So you would still, like back to page 7 here, the $6.3 million, your annual contribution amount, you would still pay that out of the general fund. Think of this as a reserve to be used in the future.
Okay, so thank you. All right, thank you.
Again, you can use the funds for pension obligations at any time. You can choose a less aggressive investment strategy in the retirement system. We have 5 risk tolerance levels that Andrew will go over. The most common one chosen for pensions so far has been moderately conservative, which is the second one from the bottom, which tells us a lot. Folks don't want to be as aggressive as CalPERS on this reserve money. They want to be more conservative, and they potentially maybe want to use it over a shorter time frame. They have that option. And then with us, because we have both buckets, OPEB and pension, if you were to engage us potentially for OPEB as well, the assets aggregate for fee purposes and therefore potentially lower fees. Thanks to Rex and Stephanie, I did want to touch very quickly on our OPEB capability. You are already pre-funded with our friends in Sacramento, CalPERS, $29 million in assets within your OPEB already, so you've done a fantastic funding already. Keep us in mind for that as well. We'd like to compete for your business. The main reasons why you would want to switch like Brian Mayhew and MTC did is full service and better performance. This slide here shows Highmark versus CalPERS on the same risk tolerance strategy over a 5-year period at the very bottom. This is net of all fees, fund level fees, investment management fees, every kind of fee that's out there. 8.96 versus 7.75, so about 120 points of outperformance. And that's why 5 agencies have transferred to the PARS program over time. They do good. We just think we do better. Tongue in cheek, right? All right. Here are the returns over a 5-year period of time on all 5 strategies at different risk tolerance levels. Capital appreciation at the top. Again, that's most closely aligned with CalPERS, and then conservative at the bottom. We want to give you a range, knowing there's options. And then our fee structure is 0.25% for assets under $5 billion. For PARS, again, no fee to set up the program, no fees charged until assets in the trust. So once you put assets in, this fee schedule kicks into gear. There is no monthly minimum. The other fee would be the investment management fee by Highmark, and that ranges from 25 to 31 basis points, also known as 0.25 to 0.31%. So collectively together, our 25 versus their 31, worst case scenario, would be 56 basis points, or 0.56. Although Highmark is our partner, we don't receive any compensation from the investment side. I just wanted to make that clear. There is an arm's length arrangement, no conflict of interest. They earn their fee for what they do, and we earn our fee for what we do. That's all my presentation. I want to turn it over to Andrew at this point, unless there's any questions.
What's the average size of the each of these of each of the customers
agencies
that you have? Yeah, I mean, I don't mean their employee size. I mean, average size of the amount of money you're managing.
Assets in the account.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, let me look at that to reflect on here. I would say smallest is.
Was that for pension?
Yes.
Pension, I would say on average, we're looking at maybe 750 to 1.2 million.
Thank you.
A lot of these agencies are on the smaller side. I think the biggest one might be City of Healdsburg at 4.1 million.
Great. Thank you.
For OPED, the smallest probably 250,000, and the largest Contra Costa County over 200 million.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
That's four. Yeah, just the 3 o'clock button. Okay.
Good morning. My name is Andrew Brown. I'm a Director of Investments and Portfolio Manager with Highmark Capital Management. For my presentation today, I was going to cover a couple of topics, give you just a very brief background on Highmark Capital, and then secondly, share with you maybe some of the investment considerations, primarily on pension, but also touch on a little bit about OPEB in terms of what clients have utilized to form an investment objective, and I'll touch on the risk consideration question that you asked a second ago. And then maybe to foster some better understanding of how we do what we do, I've also shown a couple of sample portfolios that we can take a look at. So first off, starting off with the investment team at Highmark, we are, first off, I guess I should say we're local, headquartered here in San Francisco, a subsidiary of Union Bank, and it's been that way for a long period of time, since 1919. So in 2 years from now, we'll be celebrating our 100th anniversary, working primarily with our bank clients. However, since 1994, as Mitch mentioned, we have been working with PARS. And over that period of time, we've developed a very nice relationship. It says in the middle of this page, $15.2 billion in assets under management. Geez, $1.4-ish billion. Is PARS related, and that covers 401A plans, certainly a billion of that, more than a billion is OPEB-related engagements. And then just very recently, the new pension rate stabilization program has taken off. So much of what we do is really focusing with our partner down in Southern California, PARS. It's a rather small organization. It's not like Morgan Stanley or Merrill Lynch. It's 53 investment professionals, but a talented group. 30 of us hold the CFA designation, and on average, we have 22 years of investment experience in the industry. The next page, it's certainly a team sport. It's not one woman can manage $15 billion. So at Highmark, certainly we practice the team concept. Every engagement has a lead portfolio manager. I am the point person within the PARS portfolios, but I have a team of five portfolio managers within Highmark that do mainly PARS-related engagements. And really what we have here is those 53 investment professionals organized in functional units that support us in terms of managing our clients' assets. Maybe I would touch on two groups here. At 1 o'clock there, the Asset Allocation Committee. This would be a team of five directors within Highmark that, you know, really focus and formulate our worldview. Are we overweight stocks? Are we overweight bonds? How many times the Fed going to raise rates? Those decisions, those inputs are formulated at the Asset Allocation Committee level and then received down at the portfolio manager level so we can execute accordingly across our client portfolios. And Mitch touched on a little bit about the mutual fund manager due diligence group at 8 o'clock here. That would be a team of six analysts that, as Mitch highlighted, takes that multi-thousand, 14,000 universe manager, fund level manager, and really call it down into a working group that we can then build portfolios based on. Okay, page 19 talks a little bit about our investment objectives that we offer our clients. And I guess I'll start off with OPEB just very briefly. And so when working with a client in an OPEB engagement, It's somewhat of a systematic process. It's very formula-driven for the most part. An agency, a district, a county will have an actuarial evaluation prepared. Within that evaluation, it will say discount rate 7.2, 7%, 6.5%. There's some number that's at least driving it on the onset. And so what we do is we, at least in the beginning, take a look at that number. And in this case, I think the current OPEB is 7.2% for the district. And then we would take a look at our five investment objectives that we offer our clients at Highmark. And we would say, okay, well, forget the risk for a moment, just a moment. What would be the expected rate of return that these five investment objectives, which one might be the best match for? In this case, 7.2%. So just on the very surface, we would say, well, capital appreciation based on Highmark's expected rates of return, we would lead with capital appreciation, putting risk, at least to the moment, to the side. And so capital appreciation, you can see at the table insert at the bottom right-hand of this page, 65 to 85% in stock. So that looks very much like CERBT1 or certainly the underlying CalPERS pension plan asset allocation, heavily tilted to equities, 10 to 30% bonds, 0 to 20% in cash investments. And so certainly there are risk considerations, but typically, you know, OPEB, it's a new phenomenon. I mean, people are in maybe the fourth or fifth inning of it. In other words, in terms of funding it maybe since 2007, 2008, that's typically when we saw most clients at least begin doing this. So they have a long-term time horizon, the ability to take risk, the ups and well as well as the downs are prevalent. So it's kind of a quick conversation in terms of coming up with an investment objective. It's a little bit different with pension. With pension, certainly the underlying, I mean, there's no argument that the underlying liabilities are just as long, maybe longer, than OPEB. And the discount rate target, well, we know it's 7.5 now, and it's going to go down to 7. So it's a big number. But a lot of clients, as Mitch highlighted, I think it was the fifth bullet point, are looking at this as a rainy day fund. You know, you're at the blue line, and you're going to go to the red line on that one funding gap slide that Mitch showed. At some point, the thought is, at least for most clients, that we would take from this pool of assets, that the PARS Highmark pool, and we would send it forward. It could be 3 years, it could be 5 years, it could be 7 years, might be 2 years, I don't know. But the time horizon is much more, it's shrunk. It's not a 30-year horizon, at least in the eyes of most clients. There are some clients, not to name names, but the fire district in the place where we live. Yeah. They're looking at this as maybe more of as an augmenting CSERA. So their marching orders to me was capital appreciation. So in essence, I don't want to say I'm competing with CSERA, but it's a very complementary, congruent type of asset allocation. As Mitch highlighted, most clients are saying, well, moderately conservative, which 20 to 40% stocks, 50 to 80% bonds, that's typically the box that clients are checking. That's the mandate that they're asking me to execute on their behalf. Making something more than the general fund, but something south of what the folks in Sacramento can generate. And I know that that's a fuzzy concept. It's not a number, and I'm a numbers guy. But that's kind of how the discussions emanate with me in the various finance committees that I've worked with over the last six quarters with pension prefunding. Yes.
Ms. Brown, I'm sorry. You just said south or north of – this does better than PERS.
It would be north of – well, knock on wood. It would be hopefully better than north of LAIF or the general fund.
Okay.
So higher. But moderately conservative will not outperform, at least over the long haul, if equities do what equities should do. It shouldn't outperform CalPERS.
Okay, I got it backwards.
So south of. Yeah. And I know that's kind of to answer your question about, or to address a little bit the risk consideration, that's kind of how it kind of plays out. I mean, I could give you standard deviation, but... Just very quickly on what the portfolios look like. We believe in diversification, so you'll see that, and I show here moderately conservative, so that was the 20 to 40% stocks, 50 to 80% fixed income allocation. Diversification depicted on the pie chart with a variety of asset classes represented, stocks, bonds, cash, styles, large cap, mid cap, small cap. Certainly we invest in international markets, fixed income side of the ledger as well. But probably the best page would be the next one, just to show the portfolio concepts. We offer two varieties, one focusing on active management. So that would be the one on the left here. This would be a collection of 17 or 18 predominantly mutual funds that we invest in with the hope of outperforming a certain benchmark or target market. On the right-hand side of the page, we have an index-based platform that is 100% index oriented. Either one of these would have the same asset allocation. Today, 30% stocks, 66% in fixed income, and 4% in cash. So that's going to be congruent, but different platforms that we tend to address the investment question. Open architecture, vetted by our manager due diligence group. There was a question that was presented ahead of time in terms of, I don't think it was social responsible investing, but maybe addressing how would we invest or not invest in certain companies that may not be congruent with the district's values. As you can kind of see from the platform, it's difficult for us to back out, pick on Exxon, pick on Chevron, one of those companies, in as much as, you know, if the Dodge and Cox manager is invested in it, it's hard to say, okay, well, we won't invest in Dodge and Cox. Conversely, I mean, if Columbia was not invested in it today, maybe they would invest in it tomorrow. So it's hard in this type of platform to address those type of concerns. And since I got the question ahead of time, I wanted to offer up maybe an unsatisfying answer, but an answer nevertheless. Okay. Your body language didn't give it away, so. Okay. And that's me. Any questions?
Could I just, I have just a couple of broad questions, and I'm not sure who to address these to. So just to finish up on the last point that you raised, how, if you were to think about just the Bay Area Air Quality Management District as an entity and one that probably wants to invest in the future of clean air, if the platform that you currently have would be difficult to use to do that, is there a platform you would recommend that we could use?
Yeah, it's hard for me to make a recommendation based on social-related concepts. We were in front of West Hollywood, City of West Hollywood, a few weeks ago, and there was a same sort of discussion topic that
came up. Sounds like West Hollywood. Got it.
That came up. And it's hard to put a mandate on something like this when really our primary focus would be on fiduciary considerations. And you know, for OPEB, if 7.2 was the bogey, trying to hit 7.2, I mean, that really has to be our focus. You know, I think, and not that you're shirking those duties in terms of this platform, but I just don't know if they can be a part of this type of program.
So is there an alternative type? The reason I'm asking is that my suspicion is that more and more parts of the country are going to be interested in the question that West Hollywood is asking and that I'm asking. And I think that for a long time there's been a strong interest in understanding how to better leverage investments from institutions so that we're not investing in things that ultimately we end up paying more money for. And the example I would use is that, you know, many of us serve on boards of supervisors, and so the last thing we want to do is invest in something that then fills our emergency rooms with asthma patients, as an example. Sure. So I guess the thing that I would say, and if this isn't a question you can answer, I appreciate that, because I also appreciate it's a complicated question. I don't mean to make it sound so simple, but I do I am interested in understanding whether or not you see on the horizon folks who do your kind of work thinking through socially responsible investing, and I'm using that as a very broad term that's much more customized to the customer than I think is being done today. If that's a trend you see, if you see any other organizations that are doing that, and if we wanted to learn more about it, how would we go about doing that?
Yeah. Trend, I think it's talked about, but I see it more on the private client side, where, you know, Mrs. Jones, this is her $3 million portfolio, and if Highmark, you want to manage it, then you know, you're going to, you know, not invest in these companies. With pension engagement, certainly on the corporate side, my corporate pensions, they're under ERISA, and I think that in that respect, we can kind of hide under that umbrella and say, well, ERISA says we can't, so, you know.
Well, what I'm really looking at is the product of the right. Stabilization fund, for example. That is a product that you all helped develop because we had a lot of institutions that weren't saving money properly to be able to invest in their pensions, right? That's a brand new, you call it a program, I call it a product. Am I accurate about that?
I like program better, but...
No, but I meant, am I accurate about the development of that?
In terms of...
The need it was trying to fill.
I think it's trying to... It's well, I'm,
well it, my... let me not... That's a rabbit hole. But I guess the bigger question, is very simply, is do you have... Is there some place you would direct us to better understand the implications of the question that I asked and the opportunity there? And
there are organizations that do offer social... investing and a focus on social investing that certainly can be deployed in an investment program. But ultimately, I mean, if they underperform,
right.
then the aim of either OPEB or pension rate stabilization wasn't achieved. And
yeah, no, I understand yeah. that. I just have one more question, and then I would be happy to yield the floor. There was an indicator you used that showed us that I think it was 76% or something of our overall investment coverage, our coverage ratio for OPEB. I think that was the number. My question is there an industry standard that your company or frankly your company recommends, and what's that target standard?
For OPEB, I don't think that a standard would be the phrase I would use, but there's an average certainly, and if you're in the 70s for OPEB, gold star, silver star, yeah, I think within our 150 some odd relationships, we have 5-6 that are fully funded, and many are, gosh, in the 30s and 40s. So if you have a 70 something funding ratio, you're probably well ahead of other agencies and districts.
Do either of your organizations make a recommendation about what that target should be?
No, okay. We wouldn't make a recommendation because you know so many clients don't have a whole lot of money, and so how can we say you know fund this agency when they're worried about so many other dynamics within what or fund this program when they have so many other things going on in their agency? So we wouldn't really be in a Sure, get to fully funded status as soon as possible.
Well, I actually frankly don't think fully funded is necessary. And so part of the reason I was asking is based on the fact that I don't think that. I was wondering what you thought about it.
I'd just like to add, Director Chavez, the board has instructed us to look at a 90% funding level mm-hmm. with no target date. And so that's our goal, is to get to that point, and that's why we've been aggressively pre-funding for the past several years to try to reach that.
And I've been wondering about whether or not pre-funding to get to 90% makes sense in terms of the appropriate expenditures of money. And the reason I think that, or I'm curious about that, is that it appears to me that most organizations, especially those that we think are going to be in existence in perpetuity, we're not companies. We don't have the same base of funding. And even though I know our funding goes up and down, the real question in my mind is, by pre-funding, we're spending a lot of money to get to what I think is somewhat arbitrary based on need. And we have a lot of experience with need because we've had these programs a long time. So I've wondered what is the appropriate balance. My guess is that would differ based on the kind of agency and based on the type of resources that get drawn down annually. So that's what the question was, and maybe that's a longer question for our committee at another time. Thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to follow up on what Cindy is sharing. And I understand the constraints on what you're sharing with us. But since Jean was telling us that we've got time to think about this, I really would like some response back from staff on, for lack of a better term, the socially responsible. I mean, obviously, we don't want to invest with a coal company or somebody like that. And I was thinking Tesla, I'm not trying to put, but if we want to go green energy, electrical, you know, how that does. Now, those different funds may have that, but I get the, as I said, you're under legal obligation to perform and not underperform if you can perform at a better level. However, politically, we don't need to hear from constituents that, you know, you want us to do X, but yet you're investing in coal. You're investing in, you know, oil I don't have as much problem with because we have refineries and there's a balance there. But in that's where I'm going. So it's more a comment following up what Cindy said, and just so staff is aware, I think our entire board would like to come back to here at the appropriate time, but how we might move towards that and actually working with these and your, go ahead.
I was going to say one strategy, I don't know if it's necessarily a solution, but it might be an angle. Would be the platform on the right-hand side of the, you know, the index-based platform, which if you're in the index, you're in the entire market. So if you're in the S&P 500 index fund, you have everybody there. So it doesn't it certainly doesn't back out anything. But I don't want to say you have cover, but hey, we're just in index funds getting the market, you know, expected rate of return in the market and the companies that are in this index.
And I get where you're coming from. I just think we...
I think we need to do a little bit more work and look at this. We're not the only agency and we're not the only entity who has this issue. We've seen countries, full countries, divest from investments like these. So there are probably mechanisms out there. I think we just need to do a little bit more digging and work a little bit with our partners, because what you're seeing here is index funds that are amalgamations of different things that a portfolio manager thinks are going to perform well. So let us take that as an action item. Let's take a look at it, and then let's come back to you and give you an idea of some of those options that would be out there for us.
Well, and I thank Cindy for bringing this up, because I've been focusing on another question that's going to come up from the staff recommendation, and then all of a sudden, so thanks, Cindy, because I think we really do need to be, our constituents expect that of us. So thank you.
I don't think we're going to recommend adoption today.
Okay.
I think we're just kind of fact-finding mission. Director Canepa? No? Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen,
thank you.
Very, very much. Appreciate your time today.
I was just going to mention we have a couple of more slides that I wanted to address on this item for you.
Please.
Marcy, can you move it over for me? Thank you. There we go. So these two slides address a question from the last meeting, I believe, from Director Chavez about what our current benefits were and employees' contributions to those retirement pensions. So right now at the district, we have a two-tiered system like probably most of you. 2% at 55 for our classic employees. They pay a 7% contribution towards their retirement. And the folks who are PEPRA employees, the Public Pension Reform Act, coming in at 2% at 62, and their contribution is 50% of the normal cost right now. That's 5.5%.
So do the classic employees not pay 50% of the normal cost?
That's correct.
Are we moving towards that?
I will be bringing back at the board during contract negotiations some closed session discussions
Thank you.
About our strategy for future contributions.
And I understand that's a, what do we call that? Negotiation.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just aware of that a great deal because in Contra Costa we have moved to that. It's not fun. It can be very painful, but I'll look forward to that. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We have 5 or 6 tiers in San Mateo County.
Lovely.
Yeah, it's difficult.
It's great to administer on the HR side, I have to tell you. Yeah, yeah. And our employees, in the last contract negotiations several years ago, began to pick up the employer contribution that we were making those payments on behalf of employees. Yeah. And over a 3-year period, they picked up that whole 7% during a 3-year period during the last negotiations.
Well, that should bring them up to 50 then, because the way I look at it, the employers, this is not the unfunded, the employer's 50, the employee's 50. We, as an employer, too, are paying 25 or half of the employee. So the employer was paying 75, and the employee was only paying 25, and we moved that back. So when you're saying...
Well, the rates have gone up, and so I believe that the 7% is less than 50%.
I see.
A great amount less, but it is less than the required contribution,
okay.
The normal cost. And then the next slide... Yes.
Could you just talk a little bit about the vesting strategy?
Sure.
And why it's at 5? I'm more just curious if that's because of the specialization of the employees that you have to fight to get, and then once they vest, they're less likely to leave. Is this our golden handshake, our golden ankle bracelet?
I think it's a PERS requirement.
It is.
1937 at counties, we can do, ours is now up to 10 years. We moved it up or back.
Yeah,
or,
right. That,
well, so, just to address
your question, were you saying that's a minimum standard? The 5 years?
You were saying that you think it's a CalPERS.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. So there's 2 different vesting schedules. One I'll talk about with OPEB, which we have been able to change, and it's a longer vesting schedule. The vesting schedule for 5 years for pension is a CalPERS requirement. So you have to be with CalPERS at least 5 years to be vested in their system. And so that's where this vesting schedule is coming from, is from CalPERS.
Do we use our vesting strategy to keep employees? Do we have a challenge keeping employees?
We have not had a challenge keeping employees. Our average length of employment is, I believe it's at 15 years.
Uh-huh.
So it's quite, we have an older population of employees. We haven't had any recruitment or retention issues related to
This is a good point, though, for advertising for us as we, go out and market. We talk about, that we're part of CalPERS, and we talk about some of the benefits. And that does bring employees to us rather than it's an advertising point, rather than something that we need to keep people here. Because once they come, generally, as Rick says, most people buy into the mission and they're more than happy to be here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And the next slide here goes through a vesting schedule for the OPEB side. Employees hired before July of 2010 receive a 100% of the maximum benefit allowance at the time of their retirement. And employees hired after 2010, the point of this slide is employees hired before 2010 had a 5-year vesting schedule. And during the last negotiations with our Employees Association, we changed the vesting schedule so that it would be a 15-year vesting schedule, so that an employee hired after July 1st has to remain with the agency at least 10 years to become vested, and at that point they're vested 50%, and then it goes up from there to 15 years where they would be 100% vested. What that did for us was really, for a long-term strategy, knock down our OPEB obligations so that folks who were here for less than 10 years, we didn't have that liability any longer like we did prior to 2010. So over time, that will make a dent in our OPEB liability as well, help it level out a little bit.
And if I could just share, because each county and each city handles it differently, in Contra Costa, we made it it's a little different date, but anybody hired before a certain date continued on, but anybody hired after, there is no medical retiree. Mm-hmm. We pay into a deferred comp plan for them, because then that cut off the OPEB and we can address it.
So that is really interesting, and that was bargained.
It was bargained, and our employees stepped up. Yeah, they didn't like it. What we pointed out was they all got the 100%, this was for future hires, and we pay into the whatever the medical deferred comp is kind of thing. The other thing that in Contra Costa we had done, and I don't know if this pertains to Airborne, but we had a lot of people who were married as employees, and so they each would take a health plan so that they were double covered, mm-hmm. and we got rid of that. Yeah, you had to have one as the primary, and there was a lot of pushback, and that actually did affect our retirees also. But that we're back in 2011, still coming out of the recession, and it was the only way not to have layoffs. So it wasn't a fun time, but we did it, and it's paying off. As Rex said, with your vesting schedule, it has lowered it. We got rid of it. We wanted a certain date, so that's what that is.
So your deferred comp is only for medical?
No. We have a deferred comp program for employees, but those that were hired after, you wanted to have some sort of benefits. So they participate in the health care plans that are available.
Got it. So there's an option for them to invest money in a deferred comp for medical.
Right.
Oh, how fascinating. Well, part of the reason, so one is this is complicated. So, wow. I mean, even the grades, I just want to say, the one thing I would just say that I would be thinking is based on the type of science minds that you hire, that as the market can, you know, like if we continue to be a place that booms and busts, that where I feel like we get kind of impacted is finding the right talent when times are tight that stay when times are low, so, or vice versa, because I do worry that maintaining the best and the brightest, particularly because the area of work that you do is so critical and you really do need science minds. And I'll just share this with my colleagues parenthetically, is that I serve on the board, like we all do serve on so many boards, but of the Valley Transportation Authority in Santa Clara County. And one thing we have never been able to hire enough of is mechanics, irrespective of the economy. And so we had just gone through these brutal contract negotiations when I was serving on the board, and the GM came to me and said, listen, we have a problem. And I said, great, what's the problem? He said, well, we now can't hire this one group of workers. We need to open the contract back up again. And it's the only time we've ever opened the contract to say to somebody, you really need more money because we can't keep you and we can't attract new people. So the one thing I would just say is whatever construct that you look at over the years to come, I'd be interested in understanding even where you see minor bumps, because I think for the kind of work that you do, those bumps could be very dramatic long term. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
Thank you for those comments. That's it for this presentation.
Well, thank you to everybody, and especially to our visitors today. We really appreciate that information. Now we can go back and approve the minutes of March 22, 2017.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. In this report at the end, there is a budget consideration.
Well, we're not going to recommend that.
No, but it's about dollars. It's not. Am I missing something here?
Well, it was asking us to consideration to recommend adoption, and I don't think we're going to do that. I think we still don't know enough information.
Well, then I'm reading something different. I'm looking at the same. This is PARS. It talks about dollars. It's not talking about whether we do going into one of these. It talks about
the agenda item, as I understand it, is the public agencies, post-employment benefits trust program administered by PARS, and consideration to recommend adoption. And I think we agreed that we're not going to recommend adoption. We're going to continue on a fact-finding mission.
Okay, so, and I get that, but I think we're talking two different things here, Carol. And it's in your staff report. Can you explain to me what we're talking about? We're talking
Gene,
dollars.
Okay. So we did revise the agenda to not have it be an action item.
So we should just count that last
for the PARS discussion. It's not an action item today,
right.
But at some point we'll bring it back.
Isn't an overall strategy. This was a recommendation if we were to do so, to put these dollars into
Right. The budget. Oh. The budget discussion itself has some dollar amounts in it for additional pension funding and OPEB funding, which will be part of the budget discussion.
Right. And I understand that, but what I'm not clear on is that isn't what this says. So
we issued an errata sheet and published it.
I got the errata sheet. Yeah. So this doesn't say anything about PARs. It says in the proposed budget.
Right.
And so is this better to ask this question when we talk about budget?
Yes.
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 I know. Right. This is the PARs staff report, Carol. I'm not looking at the agenda. I'm looking at the staff report, and it talks about money into OPEB and money into pension. It does not talk about money into a particular fund. That's why I'm confused.
So
thank you.
That will be a separate decision by the committee later. The budget discussion will include the dollar amounts. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, so did we approve the minutes? I don't think we did. Okay, can I have a motion?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Excellent. Okay.
Madam Chair, our next item is a continued discussion of the fiscal year ending 2018 budget. Stephanie Osaz will give this presentation and conclude with a staff recommendation that the committee consider recommending to the Board of Directors to approve the budget.
Okay.
And Stephanie, take
Stephanie,
it away.
Stephanie, thank you for coming back.
Of course. Okay, so as Jean mentioned, this is the continuation of the discussion on the proposed budget for fiscal year 2018. And so the outline for today's presentation is to provide a quick overview of the 2018 proposed budget. This was previously presented by Jeff McKay at the last meeting, and so I will just briefly go over some of those slides. And then I will also respond to questions that was raised at the meeting last time by the committee. And then I will conclude my presentation with staff's recommendation. So the proposed budget for the general fund is $94.8 million. It includes the use of reserves of $7.8 million. It also incorporates the cost recovery policy. It increases the staffing level from 347 to 359 positions. It also addresses the retirement liabilities, pre-funding $5 million towards those obligations, and it also includes a 2.7% cost of living adjustment, which is pending negotiations. This chart provides the general fund revenue.
Maybe this is the place for my question then. Is that pre-fund of $5 million the $4 million for OPEB and $1 million for pension?
Correct. We are in this budget, we're asking for those funds to be appropriated.
Okay, so my question then is going back to your first report. It showed that the retirement unfunded is $59 million and the OPEB is $32 million. So why would we put more into OPEB when it's lower than into pension, which is higher?
So what we've done in the previous years is that we've actually in this current year, the board has pre-funded OPEB by $3 million. The reason why we're putting a higher amount in OPEB is because that is about 40% funded, whereas with pension, we're about 78% funded.
Okay.
So I think the intent has been over the years is to
bring the OPEB up.
Correct.
Okay. Karen, I think about 3 or 4 years ago at the staff's recommendation, this committee made that decision to really up the game on OPEB.
And that's great. Sometimes for us newer folks, it would be helpful to maybe have a little not on your this, but that's where the confusion came in. And so I see it's in the budget, but
correct.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Oh, okay. So this chart shows the general fund revenue sources by major categories. And as you can see, permit fees being the largest revenue source for the general fund at 47%, followed by property tax of 33%. This next slide shows the general fund expenditure. And as you can see from this chart, the salaries and benefits and pension and obligation represent about 66% of the general fund expenditure. So this is our largest cost to the general fund. The budget also includes the proposed fees that was previously recommended based on the cost recovery policy. So this is the sixth year of the cost recovery policy. The average fee is 6.4%. That's currently proposed in the budget. And it also includes the new proposed fee for Reg 1118. And these fees will not be effective until the adoption of that rule. The fee development process continues to have involvement from the regulated community, where workshops were done. And of course, there was just a recent hearing last week. The 2018 budget recommends 12 additional positions. So we're looking to go from 347 to 359 proposed positions. The board adopted the policy the board adopted a reserve policy of 20% of the general fund budget. So if we exclude the $7.8 million use of reserve, the general fund budget of $87 million would require a minimum balance of $17 million for the reserves. So the 2018 projected reserve is $31 million, and so we more than cover that $17 million requirement. This next slide provides the fund balance. Again, looking at our what we're projecting for 2018 and the unfunded liability, which you see at the bottom, which we've talked about already. So as you could see, of that $31 million total fund balance, $26 million, or $26.8 million, is designated to those various categories you see at the top, which is subject to change at board's discretion. We're also, again, recommending $7.8 million from undesignated to be used for this budget year of 2018. And the next slide provides the use of those reserves. And so the intent for the $7.8 million is to use it $4.5 million for the implementation of the Clean Air Plan, $1.7 for the meteorology equipment, $1 million for permitting processing and the health risk assessment, and $650,000 for the technology implementation office.
Quick question. What exactly is the meteorology equipment? What does that consist of? Just curious.
So we have a lab, and we have air monitors and meteorological equipment around the region, and it's on a schedule of renewal and replacement as the equipment wears out. So because they are fixed costs, we have a reserve for them. Okay. So thank you.
I will briefly go over the unfunded liabilities. We've talked about this already, but again, this was already presented where we're at 78% funded for CalPERS pension. The funding policy that the board approved a couple years ago is 90% target level with no target date. And for this particular fiscal year, we're seeking approval to pre-fund $1 million. The other is other post-retirement benefits, or as we can call it, OPEB. And again, for the 2015 valuation, we're $62 million obligation. It's 47% funded, and there's $33 million unfunded. Our funding policy is 90% with no target date, and the pre-funded amount being proposed is $4 million. And you've already heard the presentation on considering diversifying this investment. However, the budget does not require that to occur. We're just seeking for authorization for those funds to be set aside. Now I'll talk about the questions that were raised at the previous Budget and Finance Committee meetings. So one was, why is the budget increase from 2017 large, which is $16.8 million? The next was, how much of the $16.8 million increase is covered by reserves versus reoccurring revenue? Another question was, how do the 12 new positions map to the divisions and position titles? And the other was, what are the headcount funded sources for the district? So to walk through those questions, the first being the $16.8 million. And the main reason for the large increase is the use of reserves of $7.8 million, again, to fund one-time expenses. So I will provide some information shortly on the next two slides. But the key points I want to emphasize here is, one, that reoccurring expense increases are 100% covered by the increases in reoccurring revenues. The second is that one-time expenses are 77% covered by the use of the reserves and the remaining 23% by increases in reoccurring revenues. So I'll talk a little bit more about that in these next two slides.
Stephanie, can we go back on that? And I understand that the 77 and 23. So next year, in other words, next year it's always the next year you have to pay for something. These will be 100% paid for by the end of the fiscal year, so there'll be no carryover expenses, especially in that 23% in the 19-20 fiscal year. Everybody's shaking their heads. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. So this next slide sort of breaks this down for you and looks at the reoccurring revenues that we're projecting for 2018 of $9 million to the reoccurring expenses of $6.7 million. As you can see, we're projecting that property tax will go up 4.6, permit fees 3.8 million, and penalties and settlements 600,000. The reoccurring expenses shows the 12 additional staff that we're recommending with benefits at 1.9 million, 2.7% COLA, and obviously increases in premiums to total 1.8 million. The increase in OPEB pre-funding, as I mentioned before, this current year we are pre-funding $3 million. We're asking for $4 million, so that net increase is $1 million that we're increasing. And then you have the increase in the pension pre-funding. This current year's budget have $300,000. We're recommending $1 million for 2018, so that increase is $700,000. We also have a new office, the Diversity, Equity, Inclusion Office. That budget is $500,000. And then we've got about 50 other programs in the general fund, and other services just increased cumulatively to $800,000 for those 50 programs. So if you look at the $9 million in reoccurring revenues against the reoccurring expenses of 6.7, you can see that is fully 100% covered. The expenses are 100% covered by the reoccurring revenues of $9 million, leaving a balance of about $2.3 million, which I will talk about on the next slide. We're projecting an increase of $600,000.
It's based on the last several years of historical data. So as I think we mentioned earlier in the presentation, or perhaps it was a different presentation, we tend to set that number fairly conservatively. And I think it's at 2.2 right now?
2.2.
Yeah, and so to go to 2.8 seems within the comfort zone of what we've been able to collect over the last several years. So we're just sort of moving it up a little bit to account for that historical performance. Again, it's a little hard to predict what we will get, and this is a budget line item that we need to set to be sure that we have revenue available in an account to put it in. So that's the purpose of that. But it looks like the historical trend would support moving to that level.
Okay, so I'll go to slide number 18. And this slide shows you the one-time revenues and comparing that to the one-time expenses. So as you can see, the $7.8 million is, again, use of reserves. And that's going to be used towards the one-time expenses, covering those one-time expenses. And those one-time expenses include records management system of $900,000, permit processing and health risk assessment of $2.3 million, the implementation of the Clean Air Plan of $4.5 million, or meteorology equipment of $1.7 million, and the Technology Implementation Office of $700,000. So the total of the...
And that's just the capital. In other words, like office furniture. It's not staff. The Technology Implementation Office.
So there are some staff expenses in there. We are using funds from that to seed the Technology Implementation Office. If you look at the permit processing and risk assessment, that's to get us some limited term employees. So they're not a long-term expense, but it does go for some staff salaries to help us do that. And then some of these other items then are more traditional capital, like the records management system, like the meteorology equipment.
And I recall that you've mentioned in the past that we're seeding it, and then hopefully in the future it pays for itself. And so in the next year's budget, that's how that's going to be. Those staff salaries will be paid for.
Yeah, you'll see a little bit further on in the presentation, we talk about some of our grants programs and how they fund staff, and the idea here is similar.
Thank you.
And from our last discussion on the Office of Technology, that we were going to also try to do some corporate fundraising.
So just to conclude on this slide, so as you can see, the one-time expenses is 10.1. The one-time revenue is 7.8. So there is a gap of 2.3 million. And as I had referred to in the previous slide, that we also have a gap here in the recurring revenues of 2.3. So that 2.3 million will be used to offset this 10.1 million for this year. And that's how we balance the budget. So the next question was really just a request to provide the position titles for the 12 new positions. And so this table shows each position and its respective division. The last request was to provide the total position count by funding source. And so this table shows the allocation of the 359 position, which includes the 12. By funding source, and as you can see, about 90% is funded by the general fund, and the other 10% is funded from other sources. So to summarize, the 2018 proposed budget is balanced. We're using a reserve of $7.8 million. The budget request is to increase the positions to 359. It includes the 2.7% cost of living adjustment. It also includes the proposed pre-fund of OPEB of $4 million and also a pre-fund contribution for pension of $1 million. There are certain actions required for the adoption of the proposed budget. So these are the dates. The full board will consider these actions as April 19, but of course was last week, and we held the first public hearing on the proposed fees. The May 17 will be the first public hearing on the budget, and then June 21 will be the second public hearing and adoption of the proposed fees, and of course the proposed budget. So today we're just asking the committee to consider recommending that the board of directors adopt the 2018 proposed budget. This concludes my presentation.
Stephanie, thank you very much. David?
Great. Thank you very much, Stephanie. That was a wonderful presentation. I'm glad that we're moving forward in terms of the new positions with the health officer. My question is specifically around the communications. Public Information Officer 2. What is that person exactly doing, Damien or Jean? Yeah.
So our communications office is responsible for our media relations and getting information out about the work of the Air District and responding to media requests. They also run our Spare the Air programs in the summer and the winter. They help the district staff across the agency with graphics information and help with messaging on our website as well. So they do a range of different
functions. Great. And how many positions do we have? How many people are working in that department right now?
I believe there are seven.
Seven? Mm-hmm. Okay. And so there's seven currently, and we're adding an additional position. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Anything else? Cindy?
I do. Yeah. I have a broad question, Chair Groom, this is something I would be interested in just getting your guidance on. I do think that there is value in revisiting our our 90% policy level investment. And so the reason I'm asking you is this may not be the right time to have this discussion. What we may want to do is just recommend the budget with an opportunity to have the committee revisit a couple of things. So one is I would be interested in taking a look at whether or not we need to be at that 90% or if there's something else, because what I'm really interested in understanding is the investment we're making, the $4 million investment we're making there, could it be of more value in another kind of investment? I don't know the answer to that, but I'd be interested in knowing that from staff. And then whether or not that would make it would make sense to look at one of the reserve investment funds. I wouldn't want to put it into operations. I'm not suggesting that, but I'm still concerned that we're investing in something that we don't have quite the level of rate of return mm-hmm. that we could get if we invested it somewhere else and then reinvested it. And that may not be accurate, but it's something that I've been looking at the county as well.
Just a quick point to respond to that briefly,
please.
And then, of course, we'll bring you back something in more detail. We have a relatively limited range of motion for investment vehicles we can use. For example, all of our funds generally have to be invested in the county fund, and we have San Mateo at this point. And so, but that's why we brought the PARS presentation, because that's one of the legally available investment vehicles. The other one is CalPERS. And so we're sort of choosing between a limited range of options. But so more discussion of that, obviously, would be helpful down the road. And I think that's what the next PARS presentation probably should focus on for your benefit.
That's helpful. Thank you. And actually, one of the things I was wondering is whether or not it made sense to put the $4 million in reserves, frankly, but I'm not even sure about that. So in any case, I meant our own reserves, just as a different funding pot.
Yeah, and those reserves are invested in the San Mateo pool.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the way those pool investments get invested, we actually can do better with other vehicles that might be available. And that's
right.
why we're having
right.
the conversation.
Well, and right, and understanding that, I guess my other concern is that, you know, right-sizing our goals and then being able to understand what the upside and risks are in both strategies is really something that I think we're kind of, I mean, I've started to understand a little bit better today, but I certainly have a lot more to learn on that. And then the other thing, just as an observation, or maybe this is just more of a policy request, I feel like since I've been here, we've taken a look at our policies in terms of reserves and all of that, and I don't know if we do that every year or every other year.
We've done it, I think it depends on how we're doing economically. That's basically how it's been in the past. But there has been a bent over the last, I would say, 5 to 10 years or so for us to increase our operating reserve. And that's why you've seen us move that from 15 to 20%. That gives us about, I think, 4 months, is it? 4 or 5 months of operation,
yeah.
where we were at 3 months before. So that's been a desire of the board for quite a while, and we now are in a position to look at that. These discussions do happen, though, every year about our reserves. So,
mm-hmm.
But in terms of that particular one, that's been an ongoing.
Let me just tell you what I'm trying to better understand how to knit together, and that is how our financial standing and ratings overall, how we protect that, right? We want to be able to, if we ever need to borrow money, we want to be able to borrow it at the best rate we can. So I get that we have to be careful about that. But I'm also interested in how the new approach to investing in innovation, you know, that whole JPA or whatever that ends up being ultimately, how we look at other opportunities we have within our own source of funds to be able to make those investments. Because one of the ways we actually may be able to make green investments is to invest in our own strategies.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
part of that investment is financial. Part of that investment, frankly, would be getting in on something really small and getting many patents, not many, but patents to components of what it is that we invest in. I mean, there's probably, it's a very long, long game. So I'm not saying this is going to have a rate of return tomorrow. I really am looking at how as an agency, we can strategically invest in our own strategies as the way that you all have described them. So I was just really trying to understand the budget relative to those opportunities that you've also presented to us. And I don't think it changes, frankly, what you have before us today. Mm-hmm. I just wanted you to understand this, the
I think that that's
let me ask Brian a question. How can we legally or properly can Director Chavez make a motion to recommend sending this budget to the full board with some reopenings by this committee in the future to take another look at alternative investments, a further discussion on pension liability and percentage? How can we do that so that we say to the board, we want you to approve this budget, but the Finance and Budget Committee is going to continue to look at some other things?
Yeah. We could separate those into two things, right? One is to recommend that we move forward with the budget. And then as staff, we're sitting and listening. We'll take the direction to bring these other items back. Down the road,
I'd like the board to know,
right,
we have raised these questions, and that we will take the next 4 or 5, I don't know how many months, to work on
as part of our work plan.
And I think we can include that in the resolution as direction to staff, and that would be great. I didn't understand these to be gating issues to getting the budget moved forward, but rather further discussion as we move forward.
But I think we want to make sure that we document Director Chavez's concerns, and we adopt them as continuing work to be done.
Fully understood. Okay. And I think the motion could do that, is to recommend the budget to the board and let the board know that we've asked staff to return with these items.
Great. That'd be great. I'll make that good as a motion.
All right. That motion has been made. So all in favor?
Aye.
Excellent. Okay. Stephanie, great job. Yes. Great job.
Thank you.
We know you were pinch hitting for somebody else, but you did a terrific job today. I think that brings us to an end, unless you have board members have questions or comments or observations to make. So in that case, we'll adjourn.
Okay.